translation. Please let me know what a man should hear, chant, remember, and worship, and also what he should not do. Please explain all this to me. Text 39. Nunam bhagavato brahman griheshu grihamethinam nalakshate hyavasthanam api. Avasthanam api go dohanam kvachit. O powerful Brahmana, it is said that you hardly stay in the houses of men long enough to milk a cow. Purport, saints and sages in the renounced order of life go to the houses of the householders at the time they milk the cows early in the morning and ask some quantity of milk for subsistence. A pound of milk fresh from the milk bag of a cow is sufficient to feed an adult with all vitamin values, and therefore saints and sages live only on milk. Even the poorest of the householders keep at least 10 cows, each delivering 12 to 20 quarts of milk, and therefore no one hesitates to spare a few pounds of milk for the mendicants. It is the duty of householders to maintain the saints and sages like the children. So a saint like Shukadev Goswami would hardly stay at the house of a householder for more than 5 minutes in the morning. In other words, such saints are very rarely seen in the houses of householders, and Maharaj Parikshit therefore prayed to him to instruct him as soon as possible. The householders also should be intelligent enough to get some transcendental information from visiting sages. The householder should not foolishly ask a saint to deliver what is available in the market. That should be the reciprocal relation between the saints and the householders. Sutta Uvacha. Evam abhashita prishta saragya shlakshnaya gira pratyabhasha dharmagyo bhagavan badarayanihi. Translation. Sri Suta Goswami said, the king thus spoke and questioned the sage using sweet language. Then the great and powerful personality, the son of Vyasadeva, who knew the principles of religion, began his reply. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purpose of the first canto, 19th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Appearance of Shukadev Goswami, end of the first canto. The narrations of Srimad Bhagavatam take place on the stage of Vedic culture. Many of Srila Prabhupada's purports give insights into this Vedic culture. And to understand about this Vedic culture helps us to understand the pastimes of Krishna. Just one of many thousands of examples I'm going to give. That Vamandev came to the place of Yajna, where Bali Maharaj was performing sacrifices. And Bali Maharaj was very happy to see him. By seeing the effulgence of Vamandev, he could understand that he's a very powerful Brahmana. How powerful, he didn't realize. But he thought that by him coming, my sacrifice will be so much blessed that I can get everything I desire. So this culture of welcoming sadhus and appreciating sadhus is very much central to Vedic culture. And understanding that our self-interest is served by serving sadhus. By serving any senior, we become benefited. In Vedic culture, it's not common that you say thank you for everything. Because someone does something for anything to someone else. First of all, it's their duty to do so. And the person who is served is benefiting the person who is serving by giving them the opportunity to serve. So I may think, in Western culture, of course, Bosnia is kind of Western, but not that far west, both geographically and culturally. But in Western culture, sometimes people become upset when they see how a junior devotee is serving a senior devotee. When Sannyasi Godbrother was telling me that he was sitting down with other guests honoring the Sunday feast somewhere in Australia. And one devotee was serving him and he was saying, oh, bring some more of that. And like this. And one guest there became upset and said, what are you, how can you just order him around like that just to serve you? And he didn't realize that by doing so, he was giving the devotee the chance to offer some service. That's why a senior may even get angry at a junior. Why are you not serving properly? In Western materialistic culture, you'd say, well, why is that? He's just exploiting someone. But actually, he's getting upset because that person is not doing his service properly, and therefore he's not benefiting properly. Right. Just on Saturday, 2 days ago, in Vienna Airport, I had a four-hour stopover there, so some devotees came to meet me. And after coming, when they saw me, they joined their hands together. And afterwards, during the course of conversation, they asked, do you think it's better that we should offer full obeisances when we see a sannyasi, even in a public place in the West where they're not used to this? And I told them, well, different devotees will give you different answers to this question. Some would say, well, we don't appear to be too unusual to the Western people. But I said that for your own benefit, it's better that you do so. And actually, by failing to do so, you make an offense. As far as the public's concerned, they might be surprised. But if we are to introduce Krishna consciousness all over the world, it has to be on the basis of Vedic culture. We may, for instance, have rock and roll Hare Krishna in some countries, which is supposed to be for the sake of attracting the attention of people who are interested in rock and roll. Although sometimes I think it's more for the pleasure of those devotees who are attached to rock and roll. But if we are actually to establish this Vedic culture all over the world, then it has to be as described in Srimad Bhagavatam. Sorry, if we are to introduce Krishna consciousness all over the world, then it can be properly done on the basis of Vedic culture as given in Srimad Bhagavatam. That is the culture which fosters Krishna consciousness. That is the culture that Krishna himself, in all his incarnations, prefers to live in. Chato Vanyam Maya Srishtam, Krishna says, I have created these four varnas. And he also creates the culture that goes with it. And although he is not part of Varnashram, Krishna appears to take such roles because it's a social system which it gives the apparatus for interactions between seniors and juniors. So here it's described how Shukadeva Goswami would go to a householder's home at the time of Godohana, milking the cows. Prabhupada writes that every householder would have at least 10 cows. Gavayo Dhanavan, who has got cows, is considered wealthy. So there was plenty of milk. Milk wasn't sold. Even one man who I spoke to in Bangladesh, he told me that even up till recently in East Bengal, milk was never sold. There's plenty of it, but it was never sold. There's plenty of it. So if anyone didn't have enough, mostly they had enough, but if they didn't have enough, if they needed for some special reason, they'd just ask others and they'd give it. That's all. Possibly milk products were sold, like sandesh, milk sweets, which are very popular in Bengal. But milk itself wasn't sold. Can't imagine that, huh?
Almost
difficult to imagine in this country. People just... yeah. But that and that culture of supporting the sadhus, that they realizing they have something valuable to offer to human society. They shouldn't have to work. They shouldn't engage in fundraising, because they have more important things to do to contribute to human society by giving spiritual knowledge. And pious people, they think that let us serve the saintly people. That tendency is there among any pious people. Once in the 1970s, we were on traveling Sankirtan in Northern Ireland, which is famous for fighting between Catholics and Protestants. It was going on at that time also. But apart from certain discrepancies, such as fighting with each other and killing animals, in many ways they're actually very religious and pious people. It's a very good place for distributing books. It's a funny mixture. So we were traveling and living in our Ford Transit van. So we used to go out into the country at night and find some field to sleep in, because we wanted to get, if you had to kind of hide away, otherwise in the middle of the night the police and the army will come and wake you up. What are you doing? Because there's a, you know, there's a civil war practically going on. Several times we'd have preaching sessions to the army in the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. The army, the young boys, you know. They were young boys the same age as us. And they actually appreciated that. You know, they could see we're going through many difficulties like them, and they appreciated that, what we were doing. Sure. These were men who, you know, they could just be shot at any time and killed. So anyway, one evening we went and parked in a field somewhere in the middle of Northern Ireland. And some young boys, farmers' sons, came and said, what are you doing? And half an hour later, they went away and they came back, and they came back with their families and all, you know, piles of food, meat sandwiches and all kinds of stuff. they didn't get the point that we were vegetarian. But that tendency to offer some service to saintly persons, that was just in their culture, even though it's such a messed up culture. So although from one standpoint we can, we're not that much enthusiastic about various religious processes. Yeah. Christianity, last night I was saying how they just changed a few words here and there in the Bible to convert Jesus into a meat eater and a drunkard. I mean, they didn't change it very much, but it just meant that the whole Christian world became meat eaters and drunkards in the name of Jesus, who wasn't a meat eater or a drunkard. And of course they have some very strange ideas, just like God died for 3 days. And the all-merciful God who loves us so much, if you don't believe in Him, or if you don't believe in exactly in Jesus, then out of His tremendous love, He burns you in hell forever. No hope of any redemption. So they got their theology a little bit screwed up here and there. But nevertheless, it's still that there is some idea of God and a supreme power, and you have to obey Him. The basic things are there. And therefore it's much better than the atheism that goes along with communism, or the skepticism that goes along with just like Rousseau and Comte, and well, mostly all French, Swiss philosophers. I mean, they're not the only ones who are skeptics, but they seem to have a bigger share, and they have more skeptics. Or the atheism of the denial or the of God that comes from mechanistic science. So, nevertheless, this Vedic culture, because it's based on higher knowledge, is at a higher level. This point that's being made here about cows and milk is not known in other cultures. It's there also in Buddhism and Jainism, but they're also even Sikhism. But these all grew out of Vedic culture. Yeah, that's an English way of saying grow out. But they grew out of Vedic culture. They grew so far out of Vedic culture, they went right out. Culturally, they kept many of the trappings, but philosophically, they don't believe in the Vedas. And Buddhists and Jains don't believe in the Vedas. In the airport in Vilnius, I came across a Jain from Bombay, and he started speaking to me. The main thing he wanted to know, are you real vegetarians? He said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, we Jains, we're strict vegetarian. We're a step higher than you, because we don't even eat anything from under the earth."
Yeah.
They have the idea that if you plow the earth, then you'll kill some worms. So we won't do that. I wonder if it ever occurred to him he was just going to get in a plane which was fueled by oil that comes from under the earth. But he was quite proud that we're on a better level. We're Jains. So, but even Buddhists, who are probably the most cosmopolitan meat eaters, I don't know what the... Well, the word is omnivore. There's Do you have that word in your language? I'm playing with words here. An omnivore means, you see, there's a carnivore which eats meat.
Yes.
And a herbivore which eats vegetable herbs. An omnivore eats both.
All eater.
That's the point. Omni means all. But it actually means, in this case, it means vegetables and meat, both. But the Buddhists eat everything, more or less, except cows and maybe human beings. Anyone who's had the misfortune to go to Krung Thep, Bangkok, they know all about this. Krung Thep means the city of devas. They're all fallen devas, very fallen. Where you can get such delicacies as live... Anyway, I'm not going to say anything. You want to say in front of Gornita. Shukta shakadi bhaji nalita kushmanda dali dalna dugda tambi dodi mo chakanda. These are suitable things for offering to Krishna. Yeah, that means dal, and dal cooked with vegetables, this bitter vegetables, etc. Shukta shak with green vegetables, fried vegetables, then this... squash, you get here. This big pumpkin. Squash cooked in milk and so many different things. So, cow protection. Yesterday the subject was how to get peace. There can be no peace in human society if there is animal slaughter, especially cow slaughter. It's an extremely sinful activity. People don't understand. And the cows are in themselves sacred. And the milk that they give is also essential for developing the finer brain tissues necessary for understanding spiritual knowledge. Maleko means cow's milk, not buffalo's milk or goat's milk, or camel's milk, or horse's milk, or pig's milk, or camel's milk, or any of the cow's milk. In this country, you get buffalo's milk also. Goat's milk? Must be. And there's so many hills, there must be so many goats.
And horse.
Horse's milk they give. Sheep's, I mean, ewe's milk. There's all different kinds. Camel's milk. Camel?
Not here.
In South America, they get... Sometimes people drink llama's milk. I remember many years, about more than 25 years ago, Jagatoka Maharaj, he had just come, I think it was the first or second time he'd come back from South America. And this is a horrible story. So he told, there was one brahmachari there told him that he was getting this milk and it was very fatty and rich, and he thought, oh, this is really wonderful. He was drinking lots of it. Dobra, very good. Then he found out it was pig's milk. Milk means cow's milk. Unless specifically stated otherwise, in Shastra, when milk is stated, it means cow's milk. That drinking of cow's milk specifically should be hot. That will give us the... that will help to establish us in the mode of goodness and give us the intelligence by which we think... We can understand that, for instance, drinking pig's milk is horrible. That makes then we can have a subtle, finer understanding rather than a gross understanding. Now, often when we were distributing books in the early days of the movement, the people would see the picture of Krishna and say, Is that a girl? What is it? I think that was especially because Jadurani, she used to paint all the men with lots of long hair and make them look like pearls, including Krishna.
Isn't that opposing?
Though Prabhupada liked to paint it. So one devotee, he painted Krishna with big muscle. Just to make the point. This is definitely male. Although nowadays you couldn't tell because they have women weightlifting championships and everything. You get men who are dressing like women and women trying to be like men, and it's kind of... I think people aren't drinking hot milk. So Prabhupada saw this and he said, no. It's not like that. Prabhupada brought a picture from India of beautiful baby Krishna. When you see babies, they're generally a little fat, aren't they? I was looking for the sample, but the... anyway, we all know what babies look like. So very soft-looking and sweet. So Prabhupada pointed out the picture of the so-called Krishna bulging with muscles, and he said, this is the concept of beauty according to the meat-eaters. And pointed at the Indian picture of Krishna and said, this is the concept of beauty according to the milk drinkers. Mm-hmm. So this, all the facets of Vedic culture are set up to help people become Krishna conscious and to acclimatize and accustomize ourselves to live in the culture that Krishna lives in. And although this material world is a perverted reflection of the spiritual world, even in this material world, if we follow that Vedic culture, we'll find that it is the best culture for living as sanely as possible in this crazy world. Therefore, Prabhupada wanted to introduce this culture. Of course, the main thing he was presenting is the philosophy and practice of Krishna consciousness. When Prabhupada first brought his Western disciples to America, his Western disciples to India, Indian people were shocked. Many were very happily surprised that they were chanting Hare Krishna. And others were shocked in other ways that, well, how can these Westerners become Hindus? And many people doubted that they're real, they're not real devotees. Because even though they're wearing tilak and they're chanting Hare Krishna, they don't behave like sadhus. They do all kinds of things which sadhus could never do. Such as... going out to the cold, standing at the cold drink bar and in public and drinking cold drinks, riding in a rickshaw with a woman, getting into fights in public, eating with their left hand, and on and on and on and on and on. So people doubted that these aren't real sadhus, but Prabhupada defended them. Yes, they are sadhus. They still have to learn the culture. Yep. But they, even though you Hindus by birth, as they would proudly call themselves, you know all these cultural features, but you don't, you're not as dedicated to Krishna as these people are. Yes. So the Hindus by birth had the culture by birth, but they didn't have the right, they didn't get the point, which is of how to fully surrender to Krishna. If one is fully surrendered to Krishna, then certainly you should learn and live by the culture that Krishna lives by. I was just saying to Sridhar yesterday that within the first 10 minutes of coming in this temple, I could write a whole book on all the things that you should do in different, in the proper way. In fact, I have written a whole big book on all so many different facets of Vedic culture. And I was thinking I should just go and hide away somewhere and finish it off quickly and present one copy. But then it's the same everywhere. That's why I have to publish the book. Again, there are many points of subtle understanding which we have to be trained. How we have to be clean to serve the Lord. I'm clean, there's no dirt. But cleanliness is not just at the gross level, but at the more subtle level also. I'll just give one example. Remove this board. Okay, exhibit number one. Has anyone got any suggestions? What is being revealed here?
this conch shell should not be on the table, it should be on the floor. I mean with the pot together.
Well, if that water is contaminated, but it's supposed to be clean, right?
No, it's clean water and they put contaminated water in there.
Okay, uh-huh. Alright. So it's okay?
Not too great.
And when you blow the conch, you pour water to clean it, right? If you put it vertically, it's all going to drop down into that and contaminate it. This contaminated water pot. Keep away from everything. There are many, many, many points like this. How we, just like for instance, we don't sit above the Srimad Bhagavatam. Many hundreds of points which help to always instill in us how we're doing everything for Krishna. That's why only brahmanas serve the deities. Those who are not brahmanas, in no tradition, even demigod worship, there's only brahmanas can serve the deities. Brahmana means who has got spiritual knowledge, so he knows why he's doing what he's doing. And he's also supposed to know what he's doing. It's not just, you know, get on the altar and wave a few things around for a few minutes. So anyway, this is too big a topic to get into the Srimad Bhagavatam class. Just giving dig darshan, little indication. So the point that the culture is important, but even more important than that is the proper understanding of what the culture is. Because this culture is valuable for helping us to cultivate the proper understanding. But unless we have that proper understanding, then we can be following the culture, but we can be kama mimamsaks or followers of Sankhya or Yoga, or there are so many Vedic paths. They're Vedic in the sense that they superficially follow the Vedas. They follow the Vedic culture, but they miss the point. That was discussed yesterday about having the proper Siddhanta. Siddhanta means we should have a proper understanding of where we're going. If you get on the wrong bus, then you go to the wrong destination. You're in the bus stand and you want to go to Mostar, you get in the bus for Bihaj instead. And some may say, well, this is the wrong bus, that's the right bus. You may say, well, what's the difference? It's the same model, the same color paint. They're both the same. Why are you making such a big fuss? They may look the same, but they're going to different places. So you have to know what is the proper Siddhanta. So you get on the right. You're on the right bus. You're going to the right place. You have to know what our aim is, and we have to learn how to shoot. If we put the target some, instead of shooting at the right target, we shoot at a different target, and we say, well, you know, that's a target and this is the target, so what's the difference? And the difference is that one is the target of pure devotional service to Krishna is different to that of mixed devotion. It may look the same, but it's not the same. And we have to know how to take aim and fire properly. So therefore it's necessary to understand proper Siddhanta. Otherwise, even if we do all this, we do all the same things, but if we don't have the proper understanding, we'll go to a different place. Those who have a clear understanding that we are the servants of Krishna, we only have to serve Krishna, and how they will be satatam kirtayanto mangyatantas chadrudaprataha. They will be always endeavoring very strongly how to become Krishna conscious. We'll always be very strongly endeavoring to become Krishna. Yeah. But those who have not properly understood or not surrendered to the process of Krishna consciousness, they will always want to try and make it easier or compromised with material life. And those who are serious, who have actually understood what is Krishna consciousness, they'll always be trying to make more and more effort in Krishna consciousness. And others will try to cut corners, as an English saying. Cut corners means instead of driving like this, you just kind of cross over the grass and go like this. So they'll invent so many corner-cutting philosophies. The holy name is so powerful that even if you indulge in sense gratification and spend most of your life engaged in sense gratification, the holy name, we have so much faith in the holy name that we don't chant very much, but a little is enough. You see, and you people, you're following all these rules, but we just have pure love, so we don't follow all the rules. In this way, they insult Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada and make offenses to the pure devotees who've given this process of devotional service. And they become what is called Prakriti Sahajiya. Materialistic people who try to practice Krishna consciousness in a very easy way. They'll talk a lot about praying, but never mention the word surrender. Whereas we find, you won't find Prabhupada use the word praying nearly as much as he used the word surrender. Because surrender is the prerequisite for praying. And if we surrender to Krishna, then praying will develop naturally in due course. But if we simply talk of praying without any sincere endeavor to surrender to Krishna, by giving up sense gratification and doing everything for his pleasure, then we will simply imitate praying. We'll never get actual praying. Is there any question? No question. All right. That's the end of the first canto. And the second canto begins with praising the questions of Parikshit Maharaj. Sukadev Goswami begins to speak. Gariyan esha te prashna. Your questions are glorious. It's worshipable, first canto. We can keep on our heads. How valuable is this Srimad Bhagavatam? Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.